I'm slightly afraid now. I didn't expect anyone to show up for this. Okay, good evening, everybody. Let's hope this works. Yes, I would like to start by introducing myself. My name's Chida. I'm a furry. I'm from Furries Anonymous. No, actually, I'm not. I am the chairman of Europe's biggest furry convention. And, well, how did I end up here? You might all have seen the change in the schedule on very short notice. And this all started about 24 hours ago when I was up at our assembly and we were having like the fifth chunk and like the fifth beer and several other things. And we were, wouldn't that be cool to just make like a talk about furries? And I posted that to our group and asked them, what the fuck? Do you want me to do this? Everyone was, yes, do it. So then this morning I woke up and realized what I had done. So I literally just only had a few hours to prepare this. So bear with me if that's not perfect. I've had no time to rehearse this. So yeah, I guess no pressure on me. So, yeah, I'm talking about Germany's biggest furry convention. And if you've seen the picture with me in the slide before, that room might have been kind of familiar because, does it work? No, it won't work. Okay. Did I mention I had no time to rehearse this?
Press harder.
I didn't do this enthusiastically enough, did I?
Turn it up and on again.
Hello, LibreOffice. I'm talking to you. Give it up for LibreOffice. Well, this thing crashed hard. Should I try the video again, see if it crashes reproducibly?
Yes.
Let's see what it does. Almost! Good enough for me! So you might have seen this place before. We had a big furry convention in precisely this place at the CCH in Hamburg. And we were kind of amused that we would outdo the Chaos Computer Club in trying out the renovated thing. And turns out we got a lot of technical problems to sort out for you guys. That's nice. So if you've ever wondered why all the fog from the dance floor always ends up in the parking garage, come to me after the talk. I can explain it to you. So yeah, we had around 3,500 people at the convention, so pretty small compared to the Congress. And yeah, we love Hamburg, we love this place. And today, I would love to talk about the mysterious connection that furries and the entire tech sphere has. It's been going on forever, to the point where we are almost a meme in the tech community. And nobody has yet really found out what the connection is, but I have a few ideas, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I think we're onto. So, to give you a little perspective on how weird the whole shit is, I'm going to start to tell you how I discovered the furry fandom. Around 1993, I'm an old guy. In the days before, having like an interconnection at home was a common thing. We used to like buy a modem, illegally connect this to the plain old telephone system, and dial up like mailbox systems, like BBSs, all over Germany, sometimes all over the world. And so that's what I did. And before a lot of other things like the World Wide Web came to be, there used to be a German network of connected BBSs called Z-Netz. And that was Germany's first completely democratically organized BBS network. It had about 380 nodes, and those were not connected like the internet is connected today. These 380 nodes basically had local users. You would log into them, you could exchange messages, and then once overnight they would make so-called net calls, where they would do like a physical phone call from one node to node to another, and then exchange all the messages that that have come along, and basically flood fill the entire net around a couple of days. That was still close to sending postcards, but it was way cooler. And the one thing that was really cool to the BBS that I logged in was that they did have a Usenet gateway. Anybody here has never heard of Usenet? Okay, Usenet used to be like a federated message board. You could tell it like this. So you would have like on the real internet, which was already existing, but just not for everybody back then, you could exchange messages sorted by topic like a modern web board, but it was all text. And for those who didn't have internet back then, some of the BBSs had a gateway. So they would poll Usenet news, and you could read them through the interface that you got on your modem, on your terminal. And while Z-Netz was mostly a German community, Usenet, of course, was dominated by the USA and all the weird stuff that was going on over there. Now this is the moment where a bit of the weirdness starts. The strange connections that nobody really knows where they're coming from. So, at some point in time, the BBS software that all these nodes were running on, that was called Cerberus. Cerberus, by that time, around 1992, was managed by a company that had no other purpose than to maintain that software. It was free software. And that company was run by no one else than Padeloon. That's a name you might have heard. He's currently the chairman of Digital Courage, right next to us on this stage here. And the funny thing about Cerberus was that it had a curious bug. And on some days, user number 256 signed up. And you might guess what happened then. The BBS software randomly mixed up everybody's message board subscriptions. So it did mine. And among all the different news groups, it subscribed me to Alt Fan Furry. I had no idea what furries were. I really didn't know. But out of curiosity, I kept reading it, and turned out there's other people who really liked The Lion King, and other people who really liked to watch all the cheesy Disney animal movies. And then there was one thing that really, really made me interested in the internet that I'd heard so much about, and that was furry muck. Furry muck is like the text version of VRChat. So you could define your own avatar as a text description. You could enter rooms that were described in text. You could have an inventory of items that were text, and they could have code in it. And so all the furries flocked to it because they could define their own furry personality and chat. And when I came in there the first time, I actually had to ask a friend who was in Duisburg at the uni, and he had internet access through the IT department there. I had to ask him to let me log in with his credentials and try out Furry Muck. And the first time, the first thing that happened when I logged in there was, hey, cool, a new user, where are you coming from? I said, well, I'm from Germany. And they say, you have internet in Germany? But then, there it was that I discovered that there were other people on other universities in Germany who'd also know about the furry fandom. And so we decided to network. We created our own room there. That was the furry organization center. And we said, okay, we have to do like a meeting of furries in Europe. And we're going to be the only ones. Nobody else knows what this is about. And that was true. And back then we met at a friend's place. It was 20 people. And at that time, there already existed a furry convention in the United States. It was called Conference. Get it? Yeah? With fur. And so we said, oh yeah, let's call it Euroference. And it was supposed to be a joke. It was not supposed to be something that's going to be around for a long time. But it stuck around for a long time. And I've been the chairman of that organization for the last almost 30 years. And this year we met in Hamburg with 3,500 people. And to sum it all up, it looks something like this. And this is kind of weird, don't you think? But maybe it's not so weird, because furries have been around for a long time in the United States, especially in the Bay Area, and especially in the early computer community. You will find later furry artists in like the user magazines of the time, like the 8-bit computer magazines, the user groups. They always had furries, because it was kind of strange to be into IT in the early 90s. And crazy people stick together, don't they? There were actually IT companies directly recruiting furries. And that was also kind of strange, you would think. But on the other hand, this was right in the beginning of the dot-com boom. And it was hard to find people who had experience with all the new technology that was to be used. And at some point, the recruiter, like at this company that was Taos Mountain Software, the recruiter had like an epiphany. She looked at all the resumes and she went like, wait a minute, why are there so many people who have like anthropomorphism listed under their hobbies? What does that mean? But then she thought, wait a minute, if you have an exotic lifestyle or uncommon interests and you need to connect others like yourselves, you have to run, I mean, back in the time, you had to run your own servers. You had to run your FurryMark server. You had to need to know how to set up Unix or whatever that was, install a piece of really complicated software. You needed to have your own news groups, your own message boards, your own, in the early web days, your own web servers. And she thought, those are the people we need to recruit. Those are the people who already have the experience because they already needed it for their own community. And I found a little interview with the recruiter that actually worked for that company. I think it was in an article on Vice. And she's quoted with, I remember her running out of her office into my cubicle and she cried, Christine, we gotta get on these furries. And so that was their IT department. And since this is a serious talk, I have to back up this with a little bit of science, at least. There's actually a project by the University of Waterloo in Canada that is, I kid you not, funded by the Canadian government, that has the task to research on furries. They have a very good website if you're looking for fact-based stuff about furries. It's furscience.com. I can only recommend them. It's super interesting. Can see if your prejudice is true or not. Sometimes they are, sometimes they are not. And they found that in recent years, that means, this is from a poll that's I think from 2022, about 50 people that were part of this study at the furry conventions they went to directly picked like a career path or an education that would lead them into like IT or any kind of other tech job. And of course, being furries in IT, like these cuddly guys, and then on the other hand, the CerverX, that's making us prime meme material. I think one of my favorites is this one, where she says, "Yo, Ash, users been having 500 server errors from both app and website." And she goes to the server room, and there's this warning sign that says, "Hazardous area, suit required." And we all know what's coming. But with furries, we can make fun of ourselves. So I think the picture that you see on the left, that says furries make the internet go, I couldn't find out who actually took that photo, but I definitely saw this in the early 90s already. The one on the right, the IT werewolf numbing your cables, that's a slightly bit newer. But since all the time, when something breaks down during one of the big furry conventions, like we had Google authentication breakdown during AnthroCon, which is that is a furry convention about the size of the Congress with like 12,000 people there. And immediately people were saying, yeah, no wonder it breaks down, all the admins are at this con. And that's the feedback you get all the time. So on the left, Mike is building lifeboats, is saying, please quote this tweet with a thing that everyone in your field knows and nobody in your industry talks about because it would lead to general chaos. And he said, telecommunications as a whole, which also encompasses the internet, is a constant state of failure and just in time fixes, and functionally all modern communication would collapse if about 50 people, most of which are furries, decided to turn their pager off for a day. And in the same vein, on the right side, you have like a train of furries. I don't know which con they're going to, but apparently they probably like got a charter. And Rory says, so many furries in one flight, tag them if you know them. And then the evil iguana says, I object to that many furries being on the same airplane, because if there were an accident, it could basically cripple the American IT industry at an instant. Yeah, then of course, this is a very helpful book. Everybody in the industry should have read it. And yeah, then there's this cyber security experts in movies, like in the movie we just saw. But then that's what cybersecurity experts look like in real life. And you will actually, on X Twitter, you will find a few really good security people who frequently post and absolutely make no fuss about being furries. It's a real thing. On the right, did you know that Linux almost had like the Linux Fox as a mascot instead of the Tux Penguin? For those who haven't heard the story yet, I find that super fascinating. In the early days, when it wasn't quite decided yet what would be the official mascot, or at least when people tried to establish Tux as the official mascot, there was an artist by the name of Alan McKay, and he thought, well, the penguin is nice, but it doesn't really quite represent Linux. Let's have Linux Fox. And he draw that what looked like a really badass hacker girl, Fox with attitude. But some agreed with him, and if you look into the old archives, you will see some Linux Fox images in actual use with Linux. But the cute and cuddly like lure provided by the penguin, that kind of won people over. And everyone kind of forgot about Linux Fox. Until very recently, I think it was 2019, there was a Twitter user who has a really, really great username, Cathode GayTube. So they found out about the Linux Fox, and they were an artist and said, okay, I will redraw it. I find that really cool and bring back that forgotten character. And well, they drew the cool fox girl. And funny enough, the original artist, Al McKay, contacted them by email and said, "Hey, super cool, you're reviving that character. But what I wanted to let you know, it's actually supposed to be a boy. So it's a fox guy, but I intentionally draw them in a very androgynous way." And well, Cathal Gaytoop said, "Okay, well, now I drew them at the girl." And he said, no, that makes perfect sense. Many people I know in the Linux community have transitioned in that time. So many of my friends are actually now what they want to be, and so it totally makes sense. We'll just say the Linux Fox took the time, they were like off the map, to transition. And they declared that to be canon, and now it's officially the Linux girl, and they christened her Xenia. And well, while she might never replace Tux, and maybe she will not be the mascot of Linux, well, she'll be the mascot. She'll be the mascot for all the trans people in the Linux community that are usually overlooked and underrepresented. And I think that is completely awesome. But more weird stuff happens all the time. Like at some point we got this. So what we see is the NASDAQ dashboard, the NASDAQ billboard on New York City's Times Square. And we have a fursuit on it. Now that's unusual. How did that happen? Well, journalists wanted to know. And of course they wrote an article about this. And the guy you saw on the billboard is Kieran. And he works for HashiCorp. And what happened was that HashiCorp went public in 2022. And to celebrate their workforce, they said, "Okay, we are going to take like a photo of everyone, and we will rotate photos of all our entire workforce on that billboard to make everybody feel appreciated." And Kieran said, "Well, can I wear my fursuit? Because that represents me more than my other face." And they let him do it. And he, in an interview, he said it was just wonderful being able to, as he put it, to make spaces wider, to make them more inclusive. And he also reports that a lot of other furries in tech jobs went up to him and say, "Hey, thank you for doing that and normalizing that a little bit." Because especially at tech events, people can be extremely uptight. And that made that a lot easier. And you can see that now we are going from being purely like an internet meme to laugh about to something that the mainstream kind of takes note of. What you can see by the headlines here: furries are developing vaccines, building your favorite apps, and crashing Microsoft meetings. The inside story of how one of the web's oldest communities became a force to be reckoned with in the tech industry. Now that sounds a little bit different than just the old meme. And they're not kidding. There were furries were involved in developing corona vaccines. For example, this is an article about Chais. Chais is an American furry and a molecular biologist who rose to prominence during the pandemic because they did a lot of public relations work and tried to counteract fake news about vaccination. And that was very hard in the United States at the time. And they always try to be like positive and upbeat about it. And since they were involved in the research that at Moderna, actually, that led up to the development of the RNA vaccines, she know a lot about the microbiology behind that. So she really did something really good there. And then, yeah, okay, this is almost the old meme again. Who runs the internet? First, yeah, of course we do. So. So That article actually has a few interviews with furries who work in tech, and they ask them, what do you think? What makes furries so prominent in tech? And they said, yeah, and it's something that's very close to what we already talked about in the early fandom. And they said, being part of the furry fandom, to reach out to other like-minded people, you're spending quite a lot of time on the internet. And you spend quite a lot of time online, and you get pretty savvy at computing and programming and content generation. And you then go and pursue a career in that. And that kind of makes sense, to me at least. Then I think my favorite case study about where being a furry can get you, that's this guy. That is Spotagus Cheetah, or as known to normal people, he's Dr. David Benneren. And he's an inventor whose team at Stanford laid the groundwork for the optical heart rate monitor. Like the thing that's in your smartwatch, literally. So he owns, his startup owns the patent for that. And he's also a cheetah. And he has, I've met him personally a couple of times. He's an awesome guy. And that's how he looks in his normal life. And the special thing about that is that he is factually like a multimillionaire now, and he's extremely competent in various fields of medicine and medicine tech. He owns more than one company. He's also not the youngest guy, but he's still going to furry conventions. He will run around and just hug everybody in fursuit. And generally be a nice guy. And what I want to look at, how do you think he is looking more happy? Like this, or more like this? And he told a story that's just amazing. So I'm going to just quote this from the article. And he said, I was eating dinner at Shaizen, an upscale sushi restaurant in San Francisco with my team from work. I'm a cheetah made on a computerized loom from a pattern scanned from a live cheetah woven into a thin, stretchy base. It clings to me like a glove. So you see just a living, breathing cheetah who is able to eat in fursuit. So there we were, eating, drinking, and I look up to see a balding, middle-aged, blurry-eyed, blue-eyed businessman standing there. He said he's from Chicago, and what's with the suit? And so I explained, I'm a furry, and this is my team from my startup. He said, I'm a venture capitalist. And so we talked. 6 weeks later, he invests. So don't ever let anybody tell you that your identity or your dreams can stop you from being successful. And thank you. And, you know, unlike a certain other individual, he's not spending his money on, like, ruining the environment or, like, trying to shoot crap to Mars. No. He buys fursuits. Custom ones. Lots of them. And, yeah, so this is, if the world needs a proof that actually owning money makes, not necessarily makes you an asshole, then this guy is it, because he's being super social and he's spending all his money on, again, going to furry conventions and snuggle. Doesn't get better than that. If that's the future of the tech industry, I'm all for it. Yeah, we talked about the other guy. I think Elon Musk is the case of like a socially awkward guy that suddenly has a lot of money and does not get saved by the furry fandom in time. I hate myself for not realizing this earlier. We had the chance and we missed it. We almost, it was right there. It could have been a phone call. But no, now he's doomed to be an asshole for eternity. But you can see, furries in tech, they are... They're not a meme. Yeah, maybe sometimes they are, but it's a real thing. And being a furry seems to be an outlet or a kind of expression and an identity that is extremely important, especially if you're working in such a cold and rational and very stressful environment. And I've teased you all about the cat ears. So, why do I think cat ears are only the beginning? Well, does wearing cat ears make you a furry? Well, that is up to you to decide. It's not a gene, it's not midichlorians, it's not the fuzz factor. It's part of your identity or it isn't. And it's a sliding scale, as you can see. There's various stages of madness you can go back to. But really, to all of you who are wearing cat ears right now, stop for a moment and think about why you're wearing them. There's probably more than one motivation to do so. Some of you might do it because it's a funny meme. Some people of you might do it because it's like a trans meme. You know, it's an appreciation or maybe an expression of your own identity. Maybe you're doing it because I think it makes you cuter or more approachable and more harmless. That could be your motivation. And if you feel just 1% of either of those, then you already have more in common with furries than you might think. Because that's a lot of the things that make furries furries and that makes them appreciate what they are. And it's a wonderful thing to have something in common, something crazy in common with other people. And then having something like a fursuit or like just cat ears, that creates a big feeling of belonging, and that's important. People need the feeling of belonging together. Or, you know, if it creates like a feeling that it makes you more beautiful, you know, that's why everybody in the world does dress up. You know, we all could look a lot more bland if it was just about not being cold. So it is part of your identity. And that's why I want to basically... oh, wait. That was too early. So you can see there are furries where the being like in tech and being like a hacker, being a tinkerer, being like an IT professional is just as much of their identity as being a furry. And so if cat ears are the one thing that makes you feel that, keep wearing those cat ears. You're doing it right. Wear them with pride. And you have seen that just breaking some kind of convention, breaking some kind of societal rule is not necessarily a bad thing. And if you're really passionate about what you do, that's not going to stop you. It may actually make it for you a lot easier. And that's why I say, if you're going to keep these cat ears, or at least in your mind, that might be the beginning of something bigger. It might be the beginning to understand who you really are or who you really belong to. And let it be a symbol to that. And if anybody looks funny at you, come to the furries. We have you covered. And then there's that. I have no idea if that's true, but it's way too cool. All right, so at this point I'm at the end of my slides. I can't believe that you all came to see this. I thank you so much. So I hope I could make you a little bit hopeful about of the world and your career. It's not all bad. And if you're interested more in furries, visit our website at www.eurofriends.org or just drop me an email, or if you want to chat, I'll be around probably for a while. And do we have a microphone we can hand around? Does anybody have any questions they would like to ask?
When is it?
I see. Do we have someone who can still see you, might be able to carry like a microphone around?
When is it?
Next Euroference is at the end of September 2024.
Where?
September. It's September. I hope it's September.
I think so, yeah. It's here.
Yeah. And it's going to be in this room. Actually, I'm right now standing in what used to be like an exhibition of adult furry artwork. Right here. It's a magic place.
They cannot turn on the mic. Can a furry help them? They cannot turn on the mic. There's a microphone, but it doesn't work. Can a furry help them?
Louder.
All right, then if you have questions, shout. I will try to repeat it if I can hear it. Yes, I can't hear you, I'm sorry. Oh yes, I have. He's asking if I've ever heard about an online game called Furcadia. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. That's a very early example of like an online multiplayer, basically socializing chat thing. It's a nice thing that also started in the 90s. It's like with those early SimCity-like isometric graphics, and you can have like furry avatars, and you can like do like an early form of microtransactions to get like wings and horns and tails. And yeah, it was really cool. It was done by a guy called Dr. Cat. He was quite a personality in the tech scene too, in the Bay Area. I keep forgetting the stuff he was involved with. But one other thing, he was in the same kind of group of people with like Lord British and all the early like 8-bit coder people. So that was super fascinating too. Yes, over there.
How do I get a suit?
How do you get a suit? There's actually a couple of ways you can do that. Well, the cheapest way is you can just make your own. There are online resources that will teach you all the necessary steps. And the upside to that is you will not feel any pain anymore in your fingers if you're done, because all the hot glue that's involved, it will just burn your nerves right off. For example, here, Dark Red, he's built the red suit by himself. So that's the cheapest option. But that will only cost your time and a bit of frustration and the material costs. Then, of course, you could go and see if you can get one used. You will have to do a little research what this suit was involved in before, because if you buy a fursuit, you kind of also buy the personality a little bit. So depending on like the raunchy life the fursuit led before you, people might approach you and look at you weird because they think you're someone else than you really are. And then of course there's like a little cottage industry that's grown over the last 20 years of like professional fursuit makers, and they will either have like pre-made parts that you can basically mix and match and then finish to make your own character, or you can like commission an artist and like do a character drawing of yourself and make a model sheet, hand that to someone who professionally makes fursuits, and it will only set you back maybe 6 to 12 months of waiting time and the cost of like a mid-range used car. If you do like a full suit commission, that will probably usually cost you between 5,000 and 8,000 euros. On the other hand, there will be only one like this. It's going to be one of a kind, and with furries, that's very important. Because you can't have two people with the same suit unless it's an intentional joke. Because most people treat this as their personality, their persona, their fursona, or sometimes, one of their characters that they came up with and that they like to roleplay with. That's where the overlap with cosplay comes in. So yeah, that's how you get a suit. And if you go to a furry convention and people trust you, sometimes people will like, if you have friends there and you want to try a fursuit and it's like the first day and still not worn and it all still smells like fabric softener, that's the moment where you might ask, can I just try and put this on for like 5 minutes? It will take a bit of trust because, as again, if you spend like 10,000 euros on such a thing, you're not going to loan it to anybody. But that's one way. Just be part of the community and just ask, and people are usually happy when you're interested. And yeah, we already had some really funny encounters on this weekend here, where sometimes random people run up to our... We have an assembly with furries. We've been returning for the third year. And sometimes people come on, like, who's that guy? And they point like at a picture with a suit and it's, I'm so in love with that guy. Please tell me what's his number. So sometimes that works. It didn't work today. But yeah, that's one way. Any more questions? Okay, I see a hand over there.
So I guess what like price estimate are like I guess state of the art like cooling systems I guess without the rest of the fursuit?
Sorry, what systems?
Like state of the art like portable like cooling systems.
The most popular thing is one of those cooling vests, the same that like firemen use. So it's basically a silica gel based thing, and you put them like in a freezer, and they will basically slowly melt and keep at around 20 degrees C, and that's currently the best thing you can get. Otherwise, cooling the whole suit is a little bit difficult because people like to wear the suits rather tight, so they have a good range of movement. Some people will put in like fans in the ears that like blow fresh air through the face mask.
Or the muzzle.
Or the muzzle, yeah, exactly. That also helps you breathing. So I've heard breathing is important. First, we just think it's underrated, but I think it's really kind of nice to be able to breathe.
I have a question too. How prevalent are these blåhais and other kind of traveling animals in the furry community?
The blåhais? Yeah, that's funny. They started showing up last year. So that's something that seems to be like a bit of cross-pollination. Carrying around like plush animals at furry conventions, that's not such a novel thing. But I'm kind of pleased to see that through the power of blåhai, people are losing like their fear of cuddly objects. And yeah, I appreciate that a lot. But you see blåhais a lot more often than you used to.
Are there any stereotypes associated with the type of animal you personally?
Oh hell yeah! It's
that's such a fox thing to say.
100%. 100%.
What are they?
Foxes are basically sluts. Yeah, of course. It's like hyenas like to like play dirty and be like, yeah, I'm stealing your food, like, and I'm like eating from the bowl. And then you have foxes who are like, fries always taste better when they're stolen. And of course, that's part of the fun, playing around with the stereotypes. The self-made stereotypes, you know. There are, of course, furry stereotypes. There are true stereotypes about furries, and then there are just plainly made-up stereotypes about furries. Furries have a very bad case of becoming part of the public debate in the United States, where in the actual political discourse, or should I say, mud fight, furries have become like a proxy for trans people. And that in itself is not so big problem, but since it's even in the conservative America, it's sometimes difficult to directly attack trans humans, trans people. And so they make up stories about furries. Like there was this big piece of fake news where Fox News claimed and some other conservative politicians claimed that schools were now actually putting litter boxes in their toilets so that people identifying as furries could use the bathroom, and using that kind of like a dog whistle for gender neutral bathrooms. And it's all very, very weird. And luckily we are far from that in Germany right now. Anybody else?
Yeah, it is ironic that it's Fox News that was saying that. What I want to ask is, what keeps you engaged with the community between convents or conferences?
What keeps me engaged? Actually, if you start running conferences, you change sides a little bit. If you go to other conventions, you never quite see them as you used to see them when you were just attending. And I think helping maintain and grow and a community is very, very fulfilling. It's a super encouraging thing to make people come together and just like each other for a change. And I think everyone who's volunteering for this event will know that feeling. If you have built something with great strength and great effort, and then you see everybody being happy, and that's just the most beautiful thing you can experience. So that keeps me engaged. Sounds corny, but I mean, like every other thing, it makes you curse a lot. No, it's a lot of pain. You always ask yourself, why am I still doing this after 30 years? But then every time something works, it's back. Other than I do the same thing that theorists do, I have an IT job, what else? So I work as a system administrator. I watch furry movies, I watch Beastars, I watch The Dragon Prince. I read comics, I read Black Sad. I meet with friends and we hang around and geek off about furry stuff, about drama in the community, everything. It's a community, so it's just like that.
Hey, hello.
Oh, down there, hello.
As you mentioned already, there's not been very good or even realistic representations of furries in the media. And I was wondering if you would have some that are actually correct and positive, besides, that CSI episode that everybody watched back then.
Almost everything that's not out of the United States. United States have very weird hang-ups about conformity and about the whole identity thing. I mean, you can kind of tell why. The furry community is very welcoming to all kinds of genders, non-genders, or whatever, or trans people, because for furries, we've gone beyond the question of gender is important. Gender doesn't matter that much if you're unsure about the species. And America has a problem with that. And they're always like, ooh, is that a fetish? And, well, are you screwing each other in those fursuits? It's like, who cares? It's like when I'm running, I've been generally asked by reporters, it's like, do you think there's a lot of fucking in fursuits going to be at this convention? And I'm like, hey, there's 4,000 people coming from all over the world that haven't seen each other for probably months. They're all friends, half of them are gay. Something would be very wrong if they didn't. So yeah, it's a bunch of adults that I could respond to that, but I'm going to be respectful. Guess who showed up at our table just a few hours ago? I couldn't directly point to anything concrete. If you're actually looking for material, then you could send me an email and I could probably, we have a press team, they collect all the press coverage of Eurofins, for example, and I could supply you with YouTube links and stuff like that, so if you're interested in that kind of material. Generally, most of furry coverage in Europe has been pretty good. And pretty based, actually. Anyone?
Yeah. Earlier, I was trying to say that they were not able to make the mic work, so I was asking for a furry to help, but I was answered they were already on it. So first, I think we should applaud the furries that volunteers here.
Oh yeah, we have a lot of furries that are actually part of the orga here.
Yeah, because the furries in fact are quite conscious, also surprising. And I also have a question, actually. I cannot make choice. Like, I don't care about being a boy or a girl. Like, I like octopuses, I like rat, I like hamster. How do you decide one person? There's so many things I would want to be. I love the furry fandom. I've never been able in 15 years to choose one.
Have you tried rolling dice?
Why two?
Oh, why only one? You could make something that's like half octopus and half fox.
Actually, I'd be curious to know how others choose them, if that's possible, but I don't know how much you can answer.
Actually, there is no limit to your imagination. You could be something entirely made up. We have people costuming on playing as dragons. You have furries making up their species that don't even exist. You have all kinds of chimeras that are combinations. And honestly, these are pretty easy. But if you're at a furry convention with like 4,000 people, you kind of stop recognizing species as basically just colorful pixels, at least for me, being the HDAD type that I am sometimes. And yeah, your species can be just furry if you want to. And if someone asks what species is, you say yes. It is really literally up to you. Especially if you make your own suit. You might have had something in mind that didn't turn out well. You don't have to tell anybody. Just tell them that's just how it was supposed to be from the start. That's the standard trick for many things.
So, as another answer to the previous question, among furry visual artists, there has been a trend lately where they take an animal picture, like, for example, a pheasant, and draw a furry character besides it, and then an antelope and a character, and then a shark, and then a furry character, and every single one of them looks awesome. It gives you a visual representation on how your character would look, so you can compare the real animal photo to the artist drawing, and that's a very great way to choose. Like, there's a lot of inspiration in that recent trend.
Yes, absolutely. There's boatloads of furry art out there, also safe for work. And just look at the stuff and see what clicks. Like, my name is Cheetah because in the 1993s, your username couldn't be longer than like 8 characters. And I wanted something animal related before knowing that I was like a furry. And so I ended up with Justice Species as my nickname, and that's stuck for me for the last 30 years. Maybe don't do that. Just having a species and nickname is really bad if you're in like 100,000 big fandom. But I chose a cheetah because I used to read a lot of animal books when I was young, and there was one book that was called like The Dotted Sphinx by Joy Adamson. That's a story of like a game warden in West Africa, and they had like an orphan cheetah cub, and they raised it and wrote a book about it. I was like, wow, something resonates with that, and since then I'm a cheetah. That's how it came to me. So you really can't tell. Okay, I see another hand over there, more over there. I have no idea where the microphone is, so please.
It's right there.
Okay, good.
I wanted to ask, like, what ones are the species that are the least common? Have you ever seen axolotls yourself, and which ones do you find the most interesting?
So you want to know the least popular ones?
And have you seen axolotls?
The most popular ones are, of course, easy. It's wolves, foxes, dogs, cats. Both domestic and wild. It makes a little bit of biological sense because predators are easy to identify with because they have very human-like faces, like they have forward-facing eyes, and so you could see yourself in them really easy. And then there's horses, dragons, and all the stuff. There's like 5 million species of animals on Earth, so how do I know what the least popular is? But I think insects are pretty unpopular. There's a couple of people who actually have like anthropomorphic bee fursuit, but I have no idea if they actually identify with that or if that's just kind of trolling everybody. Can't see. There's quite a few birds actually. There's like parrots and like seagulls and blue jays, stuff like that.
Yeah, like which ones of the less common ones do you find interesting, and are there any axolotls?
Am I on interrogation? Which one I find interesting among the less, I couldn't tell you right now off the bat. That answer would take some sleeping over, actually. I find almost all of them interesting. I find is also from like a artistic standpoint, I find the super exotic ones the most interesting, because I like to see how people came up with making that work. Like if someone builds like a Blahai fursuit, it's like, okay, how do you make like an anthropomorphic shark? Does he walk on his fins? Does he have legs? If it's a girl, does it have boobs?
Okay.
How does it work? Does it have ears? So that I find super interesting from like an intellectual standpoint, than just from my gut feeling and just from what I find most interesting, just as in more sympathetic, it's all the really furry, fluffy guys, because yeah, you can just cuddle them, and that's, I don't know, that sounds like a very low bar to clear, but actually, yeah, the simple pleasures are the one that are the most important, aren't they? I hope that was like kind of an satisfying answer for you. Not as a fursuit, but as a character, actually, yes. There is a small like cryptid community, and they're doing like dinosaurs and like Archaeopteryx flying things, and I think we've had one. If anyone you knows furries on Telegram, you have Telegram stickers, and there's a lot of reaction stickers where there's one character that's act and the other one is like a generic gray shape that says your character here. We've had people dress up a fursuit with, yes, Liu, your character here. So again, there's nothing you can make up that hasn't been done. But maybe next year I will see something that completely blows my mind. Who knows? Okay, anyone else?
I have a question. I have so many questions now, but I'm just gonna stick you with one. So you've been in the fur community for a long time, like you said, 3 decades, I think?
Yeah, since the mid-90s.
So you've seen all of it. You've seen like the evolution of the community as well. Are there any, like, do you see like waves of influences come in? Like, have things changed in those 3 decades?
Oh, things have changed a lot in the last 30 years. Furry fandom started in the late 80s among the American science fiction community, and also like the anime fan subbing community. That's where furry started from. There were people who thought, well, why are animal stories always for children? We find them interesting. So they came up with anthropomorphics and said it's funny animals taken seriously. Like it's funny animal comics, but it's for adults. And that's how the entire fandom started. It was mostly fanzines printed, like photocopied. People would mail them around and exchange artwork that way. And that was all the pre-internet days. And that, of course, changed into something completely different. I mean, you didn't have fursuits back then. You had a bit of cosplay at the science fiction conventions, but that's not something that was a thing. And then over time, you could see how when the internet became available, things shifted strongly towards sharing artwork online. And then you had all the influences of all the big pop culture things that came. There came The Lion King, that was a big influence and brought a big wave. Then there was like, of course, My Little Pony. A lot of MLP fans, a lot of Brodies discovered that they're really furries when their franchise ended. And we have a much bigger focus on actually doing conventions and stuff like that today. And comics are a little bit more like a side interest these days. And it's going to keep shifting all the time. So I could probably make like a separate talk just about that. So I'm going to just cut it short here before everybody falls asleep or their legs.
Very cool. Thank you.
I have no idea if someone's going to kick me off the stage at some time, by the way, so. If I'm starting to bore you, just throw tomatoes or something.
There isn't anything else scheduled tonight.
First of all, over here, thank you for your talk. We touched on it earlier, but
like there's a big overlap between like the furry community and the queer community, and also it seems like from personal experience with a lot of new atypical persons, and I'm wondering, do you have any opinions why that is, or is it just because the furry community is so open and inclusive?
I have a theory, but I don't have much to back it up scientifically. I think if you're like a nerd, maybe socially awkward, maybe neuroatypical, maybe sometimes slightly autistic, or if you have like an identity crisis, if you have a hard time finding out who you are, actually being in a community that lets you choose who you are, that lets you choose your name, that lets you choose like at least your character, maybe, or lets you like maybe dress up like as a female fox instead of a male fox and have some experimentation with that, and everybody's fine with that. Or if you have like a furry costume that lets you overcome issues with accepting, you know, bodily closeness or touch, that can be quite therapeutic and just quite pleasurable. So I would understand that that's something very, very attractive to people who like have those difficulties. I like to believe that, I mean, I made a half joke about Elon Musk earlier, but I really do that there were a lot of people who actually started getting socialized when they discovered the furry fandom. That's how I felt when I got there. And so, yeah, I think it has a lot to do with that the furry fandom is actually kind of an identity fandom. Yeah, I think that's a way of putting it. It's a fandom that has a lot of, offers a lot of autonomy about your identity.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm curious to know if there are like many people who start with wearing onesies on a regular basis and then discover the furry fandom this way and then start to wear fursuits at some point. Is this something you've heard at some point?
Sorry, I had a problem understanding that.
I'm curious about people starting with wearing onesies on a regular basis and then going to the fur.
Oh, you mean kigus, yeah?
Well, I mean, yeah, kigus, yeah. I heard that term at some point, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, you've probably all seen them. It's like a Japanese fandom thing that got popular in Europe a couple of years ago, where people wear just onesies, like the pajamas, and they come in all kinds of like animal shapes and patterns and tails and funny hoods and stuff like that. That's something that became quite popular at furry parties around, I think, about 10, 15 years ago or so. And it's quite a common thing. I personally prefer it if people do that indoors, because it's, for some reason, that is very weird, fursuits are easier to explain than people in pajamas. I don't know why that is, but that's just a personal opinion. So, but it's a pretty common thing, yeah. A lot of people wear them at home because they're like super comfy and warm, and well, it's unless you can't really fursuit at home for yourself, that would be super boring and just annoying and hot. You could stand in front of a mirror like you're doing in the art shit, but that's just not worth it. But if you're wearing like a onesie and you have something comfy that you can feel good in without wearing a fursuit, so that's a nice thing. Did that make sense? I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I haven't seen, it doesn't happen often that I see people wearing onesies.
I think I've seen it more often in the UK than here on the mainland. But yeah, guys, you are asking kick-ass questions, I must say. I'm impressed.
Do you personally think that more people should be wearing safety caveats at all times?
You have to always wear safety cat ears at all times.
How many?
No, honestly, I personally think people should wear more ears, they should wear more tails, they should wear more paws. Everything that makes you more approachable or feeling better, or, you know, making someone else maybe less touch deprived, that's a good thing. I know people who are just wearing paws and they're wearing just them so they can pet other people, and unlike doing it with your hands, for some reason, if you are wearing paws, it's less weird. You try it out. It works. It works. It works with people in the streets. When we do fursuit parades, and we actually manage, we are in a location that allows us to go out in the park, like here. The people, there are two kind of people who want to hug all the fursuiters. And that's all the kindergarten children, because they don't have any fear. And then it's elderly people. And that's kind of wholesome, but also kind of sad, because you can clearly tell who's the most deprived of intimacy. Was that okay? Just a second. I need a caffeine refill. Okay, who is next?
So, a friend told me there's a certain website called E621.
Yes, it's the most important rule if you want to stay healthy at a convention.
Exactly, it's quite the same number. But do you think these websites, like Furry and Eating Bunny and everything else, is really important to the furry fandom? Obviously,
They are super important, because artwork and all the stuff is probably one of the most important media in the furry fandom right now, because a lot of self-expression goes through artwork. I think if you are an artist, there's no other fandom you can earn such an insane amount of money with commissions than in the furry fandom. And people browse those sites, both the safe for work and the not safe for work things, and they look at this, they discuss about it. They say, have you seen that picture on FA last week? And people will say, what's, yeah, the one with the horns. And then they will pull up their phones and talk about it. So it's a super important thing. And what's also super, super fascinating about the stuff is that since most of the furries are like so tech savvy, they really, really like tagging their artwork correctly. So no matter how fine-grained and specific your interests are, you can filter that down pretty well. And there's API access of you if you need that. I'm kind of disappointed that we did not have a full E621 mirror on some file-sharing FTP server this time. We had one last time. Have no idea who hosted it. It was quite nice. So I like to pull like a full mirror of all that stuff with all the bandwidth we have here. It's super important. It's central. And a lot of these picture sites like Fur Affinity also double as social network sites, because there's a big comment sections that people write and keep in contact with their favorite artists. Sometimes if there's news, you will know it first from the artist's page. Like if there's like a natural disaster or something in the family, that's where they're posted. That's how it works. Okay, anyone else? Sorry, I did not hear that. I should mention VR chat. Yeah, VR chat. I think furries have pretty much taken over VR chat at some point during the pandemic. Because furries, if you are in a community that actually where the hug replaces the handshake, and then you're suddenly socially isolated, that of course hit a lot of people very hard. And so furries like drove adoption of VR headset like no other group, because you could slip in your virtual avatar. And what is very weird, if you've ever used like an online VR chat world, is that you actually can feel phantom touch when someone like moves very close to you. So there's entire communities that are just about, you know, virtual sleep-ins, yeah, or just that just like to pet and stroke each other virtually, because that's the next best thing you can get if you can't meet with your loved ones. It's actually quite fascinating, quite cyberpunk, if you ask me. Meow, are you getting bored? Okay, let's say I will give this another 5 minutes, and then we should probably wrap this up. So we already are way beyond our time. So do we have any more questions?
Is there any kind of connection between furries and puppies? Because from what I can tell, the way they play is kind of similar, but is there any like overlapping the community?
I would like to describe this as two universes colliding. That's what we're seeing right now. The whole patch play thing existed for a very, very long time, probably longer than the furry fandom itself. But then obviously there's a lot of shared interest in that, because furries might also be into pet play and also be into BDSM. And so there's a very interesting cultural clash happening at the moment. I remember when, like, maybe in the 80s, that used to be a pretty much gay-only BDSM thing. And with furries, you get like a more lighthearted version of pet play. And also, furries don't like those super simplified leather masks, because furries really want to be like, have a persona. And so last year at Euroference, we had some people running around in probably like 10,000 euros worth of latex gear. And you'd have to look twice to pick them out between the fursuiters, because it's really super intricate workmanship. And I'm not much in that scene, so I have no idea how it looks from the other side, like from the traditional BDSM community. We have lots of furries who are part of the Kinky Geeks community, so maybe if you're interested in that, you can hit them up. They have their assembly directly next to ours. I have no idea how that happened. And they would have probably a more informed perspective on that. But yeah, there's quite a bit of overlap. It's also causing like a little bit of controversy, because not everybody in the furry fandom is into the BDSM stuff, and not everybody in the furry fandom wants another thing they have to explain to their parents. So for some people, just one thing is enough, and then explaining is, yeah, look, there's also that other variety, and yeah. So yeah, they can sometimes cause complications.
Great, thanks.
Do you consider being a furry as a decision or something you're born with and you discovered? And maybe not just you personally, but as a scene?
I don't know if I was born with it. I really couldn't say. It's something that I kind of stumbled into. I used to like animal stories or anthropomorphic animal stories and all like animated films way before I know what furries were. But obviously that's not kind of very popular about men or boys of that age. So I never really considered it something worth, you know, sharing with someone. And then until that thing with Cerberus happened, I didn't know there was anyone else who was into this kind of things, and that it was a thing, that it was a name for that. I didn't know. So I think it can be both. There's certainly more than one motivation before you start calling yourself a furry. Yeah, it might be a decision. You might think, okay, there's a lot of really nice people in this group, and maybe I'm not so deeply into like imagining myself as an animal, but maybe I really like these people and I like to attend the events and I like to volunteer. So why wouldn't you call yourself a furry if you like the community? So there's no hard requirement. So you might decide, yeah, I'm a furry, or maybe at some point you will find new interests that are more interesting. We have a few like ex-furries that are here at this convention that said, yeah, I still like furries, but really my attention has shifted to something else. This kind of community is more important to me now. So it's not genetic. There's no furry gene. I think it's something that happens. Maybe you go to like 3C and you see someone in a fursuit and suddenly your heart starts pounding, and that's, well, sometimes suddenly you know you're a furry. That can happen. Well, over there.
For me, I can't obviously speak for everyone, but for me, it was definitely something I always was and just discovered. I joined the hackerspace, and shortly after me, a furry joined, and they tried to keep me as far away from the fandom as possible, but that obviously didn't work out very well. And so I discovered the fandom for myself, and I thought, yeah, that always was me, I just didn't know it.
All right, I think we should do, let's say, two more questions. I think I'm running out of steam up here.
So among the German furries, there is a big discussion, and I want to know which side are you on.
Oh.
Is it pelzig oder fellig?
I find it always weird to use like German phrases for the established fandom things. For me, furries are just furry. I wouldn't say pelzig. Fellig, pelzig, flauschig. Yeah, it feels weird saying it in German, actually. So I really don't know which side I'm on. Sorry.
Hi.
Hi. Hello. Wherever you are. Oh, over there. Hello.
I was wondering, so you talked about the furry gene, and so that immediately raised another question. So, you know, you had a slide in there, right? In your slide deck.
Sorry, can you repeat that, please?
You had a slide in your slide deck, and they were talking about that some people were trying to incentivize the research of genetic engineering. Do you think that would be a good idea? Would you like to see something like that?
You mean if there's actually a furry, being a furry made them interested in that kind of stuff?
I
don't know.
No,
I'd love to know.
Something else. I wanted to ask if you think that would you support the research of like genetic engineering so people could like become furries in real life without a suit? And B, would you like to do some of this yourself?
I know some people who would say yes, they would do it. And if it kills them, it wouldn't matter, because it would be a gain for science. I see that a little bit more rationally. I would rather not mess with my own genes unless someone tried it first. it is one of the central themes of stories and role-playing and even theater plays in the furry fandom. It's one of the central themes is, could humans become furries at some point? Like, or could animals evolve into something like anthropomorphic animals? You have computer games like Inherit the Earth, for example, that make that part of the story. Some people watch something like The Island of Dr. Moreau and go like, yeah, interesting ethical implications. So I think it is probably part of the fantasy for some, and they kind of dream that, wouldn't it be great to like shed this body and be something better? Maybe something that also like trans people may share. I have no idea if there is medically something like species dysphoria. Some furries describe it as such, and so they wonder, can I like transition into a more animalistic kind of thing? Can I grow more fur? Is there something I can make to make grow fur? But unfortunately, I think the biologic and scientific reality is that our bodies are so complicated that, well, you can surgically maybe sculpt them and add something or remove them, but I don't think anybody truly believes it's possible to actually like morph yourself into something entirely different. I think even the most romantic furries are aware of that. I think we can be happy if we can like morph our immune system to like kill viruses. I think that's the furthest we can get at the moment. All right, yeah, I think we are going to wrap this talk up now. I'm completely blown away by all of you showing up and asking so many interesting questions. I completely did not expect it to turn this into something this great. And again, if you have more questions, please send me an email, hit me up, tackle me on the way to the bar, bring me a beer, something. I wish you all a great night, and maybe see you tomorrow. Take care.